This is 91.7 WHUS Storrs, Connecticut, and you're listening to Bicycle Talk. It is November 16th, 2016. My name is Ron Manizza, otherwise known as Pedlin' Ron. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or would like to contribute information to the show, please call or text at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to us on a podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to discuss anything that you would like to hear in the future shows. Starting out with Ron's rant of the day. This one was I was listening to a podcast of someone else who is very bicycle oriented, and then I also went to a big dinner, annual dinner, and this subject comes up a lot. So I thought I would just kind of touch on this one just a bit. And my rant of the day is I have been, approached by certain drivers of people who drive cars and trucks with a statement, which really, it's a little irritating. And I thought I would touch on this today because it's just a little bit of information out there to let people know exactly how this all works. I pay taxes, you know, I pay for these roads, and because you ride a bike, you do not. There's the common misconception. So this is an argument which has ended a few rather heated discussions I know that I personally have had when I've been out on my bike. And, you know, it's usually a driver of a person driving a car or truck that is unhappy with my presence on the road. And so therefore, they use this as their last little piece of information, because they want to prove to the fact that they are, you know, they own these roads. Well, we all own the roads. Let's put it that way. Let's take a real good look at this. Many Americans believe that drivers pay the full cost of roads and that they use gas taxes and other user fees. This has never been true, and it is less true now than at any point in modern times. Okay, so yes, your gas taxes do cover certain transportation costs, highway costs, that is there. But general taxes paid by all taxpayers cover nearly as much of the cost of building and maintaining highways as the gas tax and other fees paid by drivers. So if you're under the misconception that because you buy gasoline and you put gasoline in your car and you pay tolls on highways that you're the ones that are paying for the roads, yes, you are contributing to them in that way, but mostly you're contributing to it by paying your federal taxes. So, oops, don't make that generalization, because it's wrong. And, It's just that we all pay for America's roads, and that's why sharing the roads with others that are using their vehicles on the road, it's a very important thing. So you need to share the road. So this is just a simple little thing that I thought I would touch base on. It's a myth that needs to be debunked, and it's it's not exactly how it works here. So. Just be aware of the fact that if we're all on the roads, we're on the roads there, and we're all paying for the roads if we are taxpayers here in the United States. That's the way this all works. It gets pooled into a large pool, and a certain percentage of it is put into roads and transportation. And that transportation is the transportation costs are also for mass transportation, other alternative forms of transportation, besides that of cars and trucks. So something just to be aware of, that's all. In the recent years, tens of billions of dollars in general taxpayer money has been used to keep the Highway Trust Fund afloat. So this is a 2012 example. There's a report that general taxpayers paid $47 billion in highway funding at the local level, $15.6 billion at the state level, and $6 billion at the national level, a total of nearly $69 billion, or almost $600 per household, whether they drove or not. So just be aware that's where your money's going. The roads are expensive. Roads cost money. Roads are paid for by all of us. So this is a very important thing to realize. So if you're planning on having a discussion, we'll call it a discussion, not an argument, with a person who is riding a bicycle and you are a person who is driving a car or truck, please, you know, just we're all here together. We're all working together on this. So that was a little piece that I wanted to bring up because I thought it was important, and it fits in, of course, with my rant of the day because it's, you know, again, it's an important thing. We definitely need to pay attention to this. I talked a little bit last week because last week was the election show, you know, and we were all trying to recover from either our very positive or our very negative experience with the election. So depending on how you think. And so I talked a bit about local legislation and what to do and getting involved in your local community. And I wanted to take this opportunity to do a little shout out to Bike Mansfield right here in town. Bike Mansfield is a wonderful organization. They're working very hard on getting Mansfield, the town of Mansfield here that we live in Connecticut, to be a recognized town that is very bicycle friendly. And there are some people that are working there that are doing a great, great job at getting things in place to make this happen. I know this past fall, they had tied in through the Mansfield Community Center. There were some clinics that were connected. There was a nutrition clinic, and there was a repair clinic that went in there. And I believe that they're going to keep going forward on that. And now that we've been on the air this long, it may be time to call those folks back in here this winter and have a little more of a chat with them and talk a little bit more about the future of what they're looking for. I do know that the sheros on the roads in Mansfield are all very fresh and new right now, which is really nice to see because it just gives the driver of or a person driving a car or a truck the idea that they're not the only ones that are on the road, that bicycles are also permitted on the road, and bicycles can be often seen on a road that has sheros on it. So that's kind of a neat thing. So big, big shout out to Bike Mansfield. I think they do a great job. They're definitely on the right track, and we're getting everyone educated towards better bicycling in town. I also like to shout out a little piece to one. I'm sure this happens in some of the other schools too, but the school that my son went to here in town, which was Southeast School, had they had bicycles there, and I have often donated helmets to that cause because if I ever stumble across some extra helmets that I might have left over from samples or whatever my business, I donate them to them. And Betsy Parker, shout out to Betsy for teaching kids how to ride bikes. What a great thing. And I had this discussion about the whole, really about our education problem. We don't really teach our kids how to ride bikes anymore. And maybe we do. Maybe there are some people that are out there. I mean, when Fran and I are out riding on the rail trail, we'll see little kids on bikes. And whenever we see little kids on bikes, I have a grin that goes from ear to ear. I love seeing little kids on bikes. If I go by them, I usually pat them on the top of their helmet when I go by and tell them what a great bike they have. And that's the thing you want to do. You want to just, it doesn't matter what they're riding on, just tell them what a great bike that is and give them that little bit of encouragement, which might keep them on the bike for a long time. I would like to see a little more legislation put in that requires more curriculum at the schools to teach kids about the whole bike riding thing. The thing is that a bicycle is a vehicle, and we are required to get a license when we're 16 years of age or older to be able to drive a motorized vehicle on the road, yet we can drive a self-propelled vehicle like a bicycle on the road from a very, very young age. And we're not required to know the motor vehicle or vehicle laws when we're out on the road. So that's something that's kind of a gray area there. And I think that there should be a better education system that's out there for that sort of thing. So I was at the Bike Walk Connecticut annual dinner and silent auction last Friday night, which was a nice event. It was a full house. They had lots and lots of people there. And I met some people who we will be bringing onto the show in the future. There were some very interesting people that want to get more involved with helping me, passing on their message and their word. So I will have some more guests. I've lined up a few of them. I just got to make sure I can get some dates done here, and we'll have some future guests coming in just from that particular evening. But big shout out to Bike Walk Connecticut. It was a great event. It was really nice. Got to talk to a lot of people that are in the whole bicycle movement here in Connecticut, and got to, you know, get back with some old friends, which was also nice. A very good thing to do, and kind of see where things are going with Bike Walk Connecticut. They're a good organization. So another shout out, that's to Bike Walk Connecticut for all the good work that they do. And that's a good thing that they keep doing there. The other thing that I wanted to talk about today, which is kind of it's a little off track from that, but I started, you know, when you go to these big events, you have questions about different things that are out there, and there's a concern that is starting to make some of us who are out there riding our bikes on the road a little bit nervous, and that is how are we going to be viewed by the self-driving car? So the self-driving car, okay, there's a good chance that in the next, 15 to 20 years, we're not going to be driving our cars anymore. The self-driving cars are going to be doing this for us. At least that's the direction they're trying to go. And, of course, this is being pressed by a number of things, but possibly by the ridiculous amount of distraction that's happening when we're driving our cars right now, because we have all of these flashing screens that are in front of us and distractions that are drawing us away from the art of driving the car. So people are, I'm not saying that people are forgetting how to drive their cars, but they're not driving them as well as they used to. That would be the best way to put this. Now, a lot of the cars are being equipped with mechanisms that make it so that they can't rear end anyone anymore, because the sensors that are on the car will actually tell you that you're coming up and approaching too fast, and they will apply, and the car will actually apply the brakes for you so that you won't have a rear end accident. There's also sensors on the sides of the cars which are telling you that you're, too close to another car or truck on the road, or you're too close to another vehicle. And this is where the questions come out. Do they detect a bicycle? We don't know these things. We're not real sure. Now, there's a little bit more information out there. It seems like every week I get a little bit more that comes at me that people are starting to post online, and some of this is coming out of Google's headquarters, because Google is really involved with the self-driving car right now. They've got a few test run cars out there, and they did Google did a self-driving and cyclist standoff at a four-way stop in Austin, Texas. Maybe standoff is a little too strong, but this is what happens when you are mixing a car at an intersection with a bicycle. And the self-driving car erred on the side of extreme caution. Good news. Very good news. So the self-driving car was confused by the bicycle. the bicycle, the person who was driving the bicycle was driving a fixed gear bicycle, otherwise known as a fixie. Those of you in the millennial world know what a fixie is. It's a fixed gear bicycle. It does not usually have brakes, or if it does have a brake, it's only just one brake on the bike, but it drives forward and backward without any coasting, or it's a fixed gear. It's like a track bike. So, anyway, the fixed gear bikes don't move unless the rider is pedaling. No coasting for riders of fixies. Riders highlight improved maneuverability. Many say it's a more controlled and efficient ride. But that riding a fixed gear is also fun too. By the way, if you have never ridden a fixed gear bike, it is fun. But you do have to remember, if you have been on a multiple gear bike that has a freewheel on it so that you can coast, the second you try to coast on a fixed gear bike, the rear end of the bike comes straight up in the air. And I had this experience the first time I rode one, and I found my rear wheel about 3 feet off the ground, and I was going over the handlebars. The way out of that is very, very simple. Just pedal forward and the back end comes right back down and you're all set. But it was a little bit of an adrenaline rush, let's say. And so you do have to be careful about that. So another thing that fixie riders do is they will often do what they call a track stand when they're at the stop sign. And what that requires is you kind of have to, well, you come to a complete stop, but you don't take your feet off the pedals. So you're pedaling the bike back and forth, both front and back, just very, 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 very small increments, back and forth. And you're kind of balancing the bike when you're doing a track stand. You turn the front wheel just a little bit and you just kind of balance there. And with practice, you can get really, really good at it. But it makes it so you don't have to take your foot off the pedal and put your foot down. And it's a skill, and it takes a little bit of practice, but you'll get there. So what happens is the bike is rocking slightly back and forth when you're doing it. And the rocking back and forth is what tripped up the Google's autonomous car. Our cyclist in question described the encounter, quote unquote, "We both stopped at an intersection with four-way stop signs. The car got to the stop line a fraction of a second before I did. So it had the right of way. I did a track stand and waited for it to continue on through. Apparently it detected my presence because it's covered with these GoPro cameras. It's got cameras all over it. And it stayed stationary for several seconds. It finally began to proceed, but as it did, I rolled forward about an inch while still doing the track stand, and the car immediately stopped." So the car was like completely confused by the rider who was doing this track stand. So I guess this went on for about 2 minutes, and the car never made it through the intersection. The drivers of the car, the cyclists, said they were laughing and punching stuff into a laptop computer because they were researching this. They were out in a driverless car. They were at an intersection. They had an encounter with a bicycle. The bicycle didn't come to an absolute complete stop, but was just doing this back and forth thing on a track stand, and it completely confused the car. So there's a kind of a funny encounter with a driverless car, but, you know, there's going to have to be a way for the engineers to teach the cars and to be able to distinguish certain things that are out there. And we're talking about pedestrians. We're talking about, you know, cyclists. You know, if a pedestrian steps into a crosswalk and crosses the road, will the car see the pedestrian and then stop? You know, these are all questions on these driverless cars. And we're concerned as cyclists. We are definitely concerned. So as we move into the driverless car world and we get to that point where we get to an intersection, it is now not just something you would do as a courtesy when you come to a stop sign, but you really need to stop. You really need to do what you're supposed to do on your bicycle when you get to an intersection. You get to a traffic light, you get to a stop sign, you have to stop. Because if you don't, you're going to confuse these cars. Now, on the good side, you'll be able to, and I shouldn't say this because I'm not encouraging it, but you could probably ride through every stoplight out there and the cars will all stop for you because they're going to be confused enough to see a vehicle there and they're not going to proceed forward. But I don't take advantage of this. Please, please, please just do what you're supposed to do and ride your bicycle as it is a vehicle and respect the other vehicles that are out there on the road. The most recent year for which data was available from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, going back to 2013, 4,700 pedestrians were killed and an estimated 66,000 were injured by motor vehicle crashes. That's one pedestrian killed every 2 hours and one injured every 8 minutes. Cars are dangerous. Got to be careful out there. We don't mix real well. Cyclists don't fare much better. In that same year, 743 were killed in crashes and 4,800 were injured. So pedestrian deaths accounted for 14% of all traffic deaths, while cyclist deaths accounted for 2%. That means 16% of the people who died in just that 1 year from motor vehicle crashes weren't even behind the wheel of a car. How about that? So, it's really, really important to, if you are a pedestrian or you are a cyclist, to pay really close attention to your crosswalks and pay really close attention to be sure that people who are driving cars and trucks understand that they have to stop at those crosswalks and that it is the law and that's the way it works. And so you have to be on your toes, so to speak. If you're not on your toes, you'll be on the ground. So that's not a good thing. But so the future of self-driving cars, it makes me a little nervous, especially being on the bicycle. Is the self-driving car going to be able to detect me from the side to allow me to have my 3 feet? That's a good question. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. So again, if anyone is out there listening to this podcast or if anyone knows of anyone who can answer me with that, that would be great to just send me some information and point me in the right direction because I really am curious about this and I can't seem to get an answer by looking around online to see what might be out there. So if there is a chance that anyone knows about it, please, you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And I would love to hear more of what you have to say about this because that would be a good thing. This is definitely a situation which we will be addressing in the future. As soon as I get more information on it, I will pass it on and I will let you know what I find out. But in the meantime, I would like to also take an opportunity here to talk a little bit about another bike trail that is happening here very, very soon. They're working on there's a feasibility study that is going on in Bolton right now, and it's the Bolton Greenway Extension in Bolton, Connecticut. Any of you who live in this area, you know all about the Hop River Trail. The Hop River Trail is a very, very popular trail, and it is a dirt trail, but it is as smooth as any paved road out there. It's a very, very nice road. You can ride any type of bicycle on it. It's really a nice road, a nice trail. And it basically spans from the Vernon, Manchester area all the way down to just about to Willimantic right now. So it's a pretty long trail. It's very pretty. It has a really, really cool covered bridge on it that was actually craned in. They actually drove this thing in kind of in pieces, and then they assembled it up over Route 316. And there's this really cool covered bridge, which is kind of a highlight on the trail. It's kind of a neat thing you can do. But anyway, there is a problem if you're coming into that trail and you're coming in from Bolton, also, I guess that's Route 44 at that point. And when you're coming in order to, there's no way to get onto the trail. And there's no way to get to the point where you can basically pick up what is going to be the connecting piece of the trail, which is going to connect the Hop River Trail with the Charter Oak Trail, which is something that is also being explored right now. Not only explored, but is being worked on right now. And if you try to go in, Route 6 and Route 44 all come together there. It becomes Route 384. It becomes a major highway. The signs say no walkers, no horseback riders, no bicycles, no pedestrians at that point. So it's illegal, really, to get over to the point where you would get to the first exit off of that road to then get yourself in a safe place. So it's very dangerous and it's very illegal. So there is a feasibility study that is being has been done and is being presented this evening, Wednesday, November 16th at 7 p.m. at the Bolton Senior Center, 104 Notch Road in Bolton, Connecticut. And it is being presented by William Britnell, who is the principal engineer of highway design of the Connecticut Department of Transportation. And he will be presenting a solution to the current barrier legal and safe cycling through Bolton Notch, a shared use path east-west through Bolton Notch will open up opportunities for cycling and multimodal commuting through east-west along the 44/6 roads, which is currently blocked to cyclists. This will also provide access to the Hop River Trail and the East Coast Greenway and soon to be completed multi-use trail along I-384, which would be the that is the Charter Oak Trail, I believe that's what they call that. So it's important for the DOT and Bolton to know that people are in support of this proposed infrastructure. So what we're asking people to do is, if you have time tonight, could you please attend? If you want more information on it, you can go online and you go to the www.bolton.govoffice.com. That's that would be the Bolton Town offices, and look for the Bolton Greenway Extension. You can search that and you'll find a 32-page report which explains exactly what's going on, and there's some wonderful pictures there, and it kind of shows how it all works and gives you the overview and the history of it. This is a big deal. It's yet another way to keep the bicycles and pedestrian traffic off of dangerous intersection areas. So it's most of this trail is already in place. So this is just an access project. That's all this is. It's quite a project. There will be a presentation this evening, and I will be there. I am definitely going to this. I know a number of other people that are going to be attending it. I know a bunch of people that I saw on Friday night were planning on going, because this is important for us to see exactly how they're going to complete this. And it is going to get completed. There's the whole Hop River Trail and Charter Oak Trail piece is that's been going on for a long time, and it's getting closer and closer every year. So I know that they've completed it on the opposite end down towards East Hartford. There's a lot more extended off of that trail, which is nice, making it safer down there too. This is a main artery going into Hartford from the east, so it's a pretty important piece of the puzzle here, and it will allow people to access an enclosed bike trail into Hartford. So no cars on the trail, just bicycles and pedestrians, and that's it. So it's a shared use path, which is really, really nice. And that is that's going to be a really nice addition to our area. So if you are interested in this, please, please attend this evening, Wednesday, November 16th at 7 p.m. at the Bolton Senior Center, 104 Notch Road in Bolton, Connecticut. And let's hear what they have to say. Let's see how this all works. And again, this is part of getting involved in your communities, getting involved in the legislation, getting involved in supporting projects like this. If you want to see more projects like this, if you want to see more bicycles that are not on the very, very busy roads and have access points, this is an important meeting to attend. Even if you don't ride a bicycle and you'd like to see this, please attend. It's a good thing. So I wanted to shout out. I told them I would shout out to them on this, and I wanted to make sure that everyone heard about this. And hopefully we will see people there this evening, and looking forward to it. If you have any projects in your area that are happening, and I know there are always projects going on because I know the Farmington Valley Trail has just been getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It gets longer every year. Trails like that or any other areas that you see anything happening, please contact me. And you can contact me once again at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. So send me out an email, give me a shout out, let me know what's going on in your neighborhood. Let me know what you'd like to see in your neighborhood. That's another thing. The more we know, the more we can do. The more we hear of a problem on the road, the more we can do. So if you have a particular intersection that you are unhappy with because you see it as a possible danger to people who are crossing that intersection, the only way that the DOT is going to know about this is if they're informed. So just talking about it doesn't solve the problem. What you need to do is you need to address the DOT on this. You need to talk with them directly. And if you do not have the ability to do that or don't want to bother with it, just contact me and I will send the information in the proper direction. I have connections out there and I can certainly get your concerns voiced and sent in a forward direction so we can get legislation done and we can get these things taken care of. The beauty of public road projects, whenever there is a new public road project, is that there's a clause in there for bicycle and pedestrian activity on the public road. And if it is discussed while planned, then there's a really good chance that something will happen. But if it's not discussed while planned, you may not get what you're looking for. We have a great road up here that goes through, and I can never think of the name of the road because they changed the name of it recently. But it's a road that goes all the way from the north end of UConn campus out to Route 44, which we used to kid here in town as being the road to nowhere because it just kind of went up the hill and ended. And it ended in an area which was a future proposed technology park for the University of Connecticut. And so anyway, we kidded about it for years. And when my local legislator got involved in Hartford and started working for us all, but me in particular on this one, because I am the bicycle guy, and I did ask Greg Haddad to help me with this, he did get involved, and he got the money to get the road completed, and process of getting that road put in, there are also sharrows and bike lanes on both sides of the road. So it's not an actual, it's not an enclosed lane, but it is a painted, dedicated lane to show that bicycles belong on that road. And it's just paint. It's easy. It's an easy, easy fix. And, you know, you do also have to make sure that the road is wide enough. And all that is done very, very simply in the beginning. To add something on like that afterwards costs a lot more money and it becomes a bigger problem. So you really want to stay on top of your local politics, stay on top of what your town is doing and see what they are doing about helping you with with your needs as a cyclist. So this is an important thing. People will take you seriously. You just have to talk to them about it. And if you're having any issue or difficulty contacting these people, then keep trying because they're busy. They've got a lot of things going on. They've got a lot of things that they may deem more important than what you deem as important. But it's important that you get the word out there. and let them know what you're looking for, because it's getting to be a lot better world out there for us. We're getting much more than we ever have had in the past. I'm always amazed at the amount of trails that have been put in place and the amount of access that we're now getting. Wide intersections that were considered very dangerous in Hartford now have box outs. And if you're on a bicycle, you ride in the little green box. And when you get to an intersection, so now you're safe. It's going to be accepted that you are there on your bicycle. The city of New Haven has a lot going on right now. And I spoke to someone at Bike Walk about New Haven, and I'm probably going to have them on a future radio show and podcast, because there's just a lot of stuff going on right now, and it's exciting. It's really, really nice to see, because we are in a world of people becoming more environmentally conscious and people that are becoming more health conscious, and the bicycle fits right there. It fits right into that particular place, so that you can, you can be more positive in that respect, I guess is what we'll say. So anyway, get involved, learn about your town, learn who you're, visit your mayor, visit your first selectman, ask them questions, tell them you're a cyclist, tell them you ride your bike a lot and you're very concerned about things. You're concerned about your kids' safety. Tell them that you're concerned about having education at the schools so that the kids learn how to deal with being on the road with other vehicles. Because, if they don't learn at a young age, they're going to do silly things, like they're going to come up here to our local campus and they're going to ride on the sidewalks, which is, obviously it's a rant that you've heard from me in the past, but bicycles don't belong on sidewalks. I will argue this all day long. If you're going to be on the sidewalk with your bicycle, you should be walking your bicycle. Take your bike for a walk on the sidewalk, but please don't ride it on the sidewalk. It's really dangerous, and somebody's going to get hurt if they haven't already, and I'll bet they have. So, the reason why people are riding on their bicycles on the sidewalks is because they don't know. They've never been told. They've never been informed that it's not right. So we need to educate from grade one on up. We need to let the kids know what the right thing to do is, and get them going off in the right direction. If you have extra time and can donate that time, and you are a cyclist in your community and you can donate some time, go talk to your local school systems. Talk to them about how, you spend a number of hours on the road every week, and you want to inform people of the little kids, basically, at the grammar school level is a great place to start. You want to let them know what it's like to be a bike rider out there and what it's like to, to also be the driver of a motorized vehicle, because many of us are. So we see both sides of the argument, and we are able to present better because of that. So get involved in your communities, get involved in your schools, learn what there is out there to help educate all of the all the little kids that we have coming into our world, because maybe not everybody can afford to own a motorized vehicle. Maybe the bicycle's a little better answer. Maybe that's the reason why there's been such a huge decline especially in the cities, of drivers, that people are, especially our younger people, as they leave from their education, their college education, and they go and they move into a big city, they're choosing, like my son has, to not own a car. And why would he do something like that? Because he saves $8,000 a year. That's why. It's a big chunk of money. And if you take that $8,000 a year and you add it up over a career, over all the years of your working, that turns into real money. And that's money you can have for later on. And it's or just use when you need it. So that's a good thing. So, there's going to be more bicycles on the roads. We need to accept it. We need to deal with it. And we need to figure out a way to deal with it safely so we don't run into a problem. The new e-bikes that are out there, those are they're very, very popular. There's a number of my bicycle dealers that I'm talking with that are selling e-bikes, and they're doing really, really well with them. And people are using them not only for, personal pleasure, which is a predominant number of the bicycles that are sold here in the U.S. are used more for pleasure than they are for anything else. It's more of a recreational vehicle. But there's more of them that are looking at the e-bike as a better idea as far as a commuting bicycle, because if you live at the bottom of a big hill and you got to go up that big hill to be able to get to work, it's a whole lot easier on an e-bike. So that is another thing for us to look at. And if you're going to have more of those on the road, we need to start having safer places for them to ride. And not everybody lives next to a bike trail. You know, if you're fortunate like we are, we could, if we were to work in our local big town, we could hop on the rail trail from our house and ride right in and never have to, just have to deal with the cars from our driveway to the rail trail. And then we're in a very, very safe place. So anyway, get involved. That's what I'm trying to put out here. I'm trying to get people to think about getting more involved in your communities, getting more involved in bicycle advocacy. Come to the meeting in Bolton tonight. Come voice your opinions. See how this is done. It's a long, slow process, but it is a process, and it does need to be, you need to learn it. You need to learn how it all works. And this is a great opportunity, even if you just want to be an observer. It's a great opportunity to see exactly how this all goes through. I know a lot of people who put in a lot of tireless hours, and they're really working hard to make these things happen. So this is a something you should definitely look into. So another thing is, There's a growing attraction of bicycle tourists to these trails that are being developed, these rail trails. And there are a lot of trails around. There's a couple of organizations, AmericanTrails.org, and others that are basically showing, the increase of bicycle traffic on them, and people are taking vacations and they're going to the Erie Canal Trail. There's an actual access trail that you can ride your bicycle on that runs all along the Erie Canal, and it's the Erie Canal Way National Heritage Corridor Parks and Trails in New York. And it's part of the New York State Canal Corporation. And so, yeah, bicyclists bring business. As with other tourists, bicycles represent potential customers who can bring revenue to your community by patronizing businesses that meet their needs and contribute to their overall desired experience. And, think about the idea of if you're anywhere near a rail trail and you're in kind of a touristy area and you own a business that might sell beverages or might sell ice cream or maybe lunch snacks, that sort of thing. These folks that are riding their bicycles on the trails, they're burning calories. They would like to replace those calories. And if you can be friendly to them, you will get a lot of business from them. We have a local business up in Eastford that is not on a bike trail, but he certainly is in a very bike-friendly area, and there are a number of riders that come up from our area in the Mansfield-Willimantic area and ride up to their establishment. And then there are also riders that come from the north out of Southbridge, Massachusetts. And he has found that bicycles are the greatest thing that has ever happened to his business because they're steady business and they're always hungry. So, these are the things you want to do. You want to attract bicycle tourists or recreational cyclists, anybody who's out riding a bike. If you have a small business and you have a product in that business that you think would be helpful or useful to a bicyclist, put a sign out front. Put a bicycle friendly sign out. Put a flag out in front of your business that shows the picture of a bicycle on it. So you let people know that, hey, that's a bike-friendly place. If you own a business that is that has a public restroom, encourage people to use your public restroom when they're riding their bicycles. They'll probably also contribute to your bottom line by doing that. So there's money to be made there for those who want to get involved in it, and it's a great way to meet new customers, new people. You're going to find that quite a few people that come in and use these trails, first of all, it shows here on the stats right here of the Great Allegheny Passageway, which is in Pennsylvania Rail Trail, 83% of the respondents are 35 years and older. So these are people that have established incomes. These are people that have disposable incomes. They are going to spend money with you. So that's a really good thing. And the average group size was 5 people in a group. So they don't come alone. They come with their friends. And we have seen this on the on our local airline trail. And we saw a big group this past weekend when Fran and I were out riding. And there was a very large group that came out of Southbridge, Massachusetts. And I believe they started up in Pomfret Station because that's where all the cars were parked when we got up there. And they rode from Pomfret Station down to Willimantic. And they went to a local cafe there, which I'm sure was very happy to see them when all of a sudden, you know, 15 or 20 people, because there had to be at least that many people on that ride, all of a sudden show up and they're hungry and they're thirsty. What a beautiful thing. So, you know, there's money on the trails. Encourage the trails. Let's get these trails happening because they are a very good thing. They are not what originally, I've been to Rails to Trails meetings for a lot of my lifetime. And the I had a friend who was the director of the Parks and Recreation in Willimantic and Windham. And he was very, shout out to Mark Paquette, if he ever listens to the podcast. He's living in Vermont now. They have moved away. But I did see him at the ribbon cutting on the airline trail when we had the ribbon cutting for the new bridge. So it was really nice to see him because Mark put in the grant money. Mark put in the effort because he was interested in it. He wanted to see it go forward. And a lot of what we have going on down in that whole Willimantic area with the airline trail has a lot to do with Mark because he put a lot of effort into it. And it was really, really nice for him to be there and see, you know, all of this coming to life because it's something that he had a dream about, and it's not just a dream. It was reality. It was right there. So very, very cool thing. If you have an idea, follow it through and see where you can go with it. You know, North Carolina has an Outer Banks trail, and they say 81% of the people that are riding on the Outer Banks Trail have a college degree. 78% gave household incomes of over $75,000. This is a big deal. This is something that you really need to pay attention to because the people that are seeking out these trails, they will actually make a vacation out of it. They will travel to an area. They will park their vehicle. And then they will take their bikes off and they will just ride on the trails. I know someone who did this with the Erie Canal Trail a number of years ago. And I think they actually ended up doing a point-to-point. I can't remember exactly. They might have done an Outback. I can't really remember exactly. But I thought they worked out a way with the vehicle so that they could have their vehicle waiting for them at the end. And they did a point-to-point. And, you know, you're in a very safe riding area. You can ride sometimes between 30 and 50 miles a day, and just see these beautiful places. I think the part that really fascinates me the most and what I saw this weekend, and my favorite part of the airline trail is heading north, even though it's still not done yet, even though there are some bumpy sections on it, which just clearly that all they need to have is the finishing touches done. When you get up into northeastern Connecticut and you get north of the Windham area, the beauty of that trail is beyond description. And I'm not even going to tell you what it's like because I want you to get out there and check it out. Just beautiful, beautiful areas, goes through the Natchog Forest, goes all the way deep into northeastern Connecticut. You're just going to see things that you never knew even existed here. And no cars. No cars at all. So these are really safe places, great places to bring your families. And, you know, if you've got kids and they can't go that far, then just go a short distance on them. But get them out. Show them what there is out there. And eventually, you know, they may work up to being able to go a little bit further and a little bit further each time. You know, one of Fran and I love to ride to certain places on the rail trails or that are close to the rail trails. And we have a particular ice cream place that we like up in Pomfret, which is really good and unfortunately closed November 1st. But that's okay. They close for the winter. But riding our bikes up there, if we were to choose to do it on the road, we've got to do, well, it turns into, you know, a 30 to 40 mile ride and probably, what, 2,500 feet, 3,000 feet of climbing. And if you do it on the rail trail, it's a 2% grade and that's it. And it's really no major climbs. So, and it's the same, it's still, what do we end up with? We went all the way up to Pomfret Station this weekend. So we did, was it 17 and a half miles, 18 miles up to Pomfret Station?
Well, yeah, that's from our house.
From our house,
right. Was it's a 35-mile round trip, which means that...
so you take a few miles off
three
of
that. Yeah. From that. So yeah. It's, so from North Windham, Route 203 in North Windham,
yep.
to Pomfret Station and back mm-hmm. is 32 miles.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good ride. And some yes. people are probably listening going, 32 miles, I can barely go five. So just go five, you know,
right.
find, you know, just ride out 2.5 miles, turn around, come back,
yeah.
you know, or ride out instead of putting in mileage, just ride out for 15 or 20 minutes, turn around and come back, whatever works for you, but just get out and ride your bike. I mean, these trails are, they're unbelievable. When you get there, you will thank me. I promise you, you will thank me. They're so picturesque. And you're going through, it's like you're riding on roads that time has forgotten. And it's just a cool thing. The other thing that I was really like fascinated by, and I've always been fascinated by trains anyway, because I think trains are just cool. When I was a little kid, I had an HO train set. Trains are cool. Love trains. If you take a look at where these trails go and where there's a lot of fill that happens. Not only is there a lot of fill, but there's also, they had to do a lot of cutting through rock ledge because they can't keep the trains have to be on a very flat surface. They're pulling a lot of weight. And because of that, they don't have a lot of power and they need to be able to keep it as flat as possible. So they make these trails anywhere from no more than a 1 to 2% grade on them. In order to do that, they have to carve through some serious terrain in order to make it happen. Now, if you ride your bicycle out here in eastern Connecticut, you know that there is no such thing as a flat road. It's either you're going up or you're going down, and it seems like they're everywhere. So there's an awful lot of that going on. Whereas if you take the rail trail, it's flat. It's flat, flat, flat. And yes, a 2% grade. I think the longest hill in northeastern Connecticut is actually on the rail trail. I believe it starts in North Windham and it ends up in Hampton somewhere. And it's 6 miles long. And someone gave me that information many years ago. My friend John told me about that. And But it's a 2% grade, so it doesn't feel like you're climbing a major hill. And then, of course, when you turn around and you come back, you feel like you're, you know, a superstar. You feel like all of a sudden you have gained some serious fitness because you're getting that slight downhill. And it's really a pleasure. It's really, really a pleasure. So get out. Check these things out. They're wonderful. There are places you can go online, like the American Trails. That's www.americantrails.org. If you go to that website, you'll see American Trails, and that is the world's largest online trails resource, so they claim. And you'll see what's going on. You can check out some resources there. You can see more of what they have to offer. There is the Greenways Project, which you can also look at online. You know, the Greenways Project is trying to eventually connect Maine to Florida. That's the goal. I don't think I'll see it in my lifetime, but I will see a lot of it, and I'll see some pieces of it. Can you imagine being able to ride down to your parents on the rail trail? What a cool thing. What a really cool thing. So you want to explore these. This is the time of year that we tend to ride a little bit more on the trails than we do on the roads, because the trails are a little bit warmer. They're a little more protected, and they break the wind a little bit more out there, which makes it a lot more enjoyable. Plus, it doesn't matter how fast you go. You just kind of ride your bike and enjoy it and take it all in, because it's a really, really nice thing. So get out there and check it out and see more about the trails and what they're all about, because it's a very, very important part of our future. And it's a very important part of our future, not only for, you know, access to riding on the trails and having a safe place, but for your health, you know. And of course, Fran will get a lot of encouragement there, because she is very much a health and fitness person and is always trying to get people out, to get them to be active in her doctor's practice, because that is a constant problem with people. They tend to not want to work out. They don't want to, it's not a workout. Just get out and move. Get on your bicycle and move. Or just go for a walk on these trails. They're beautiful. We have one section of the trail down our area, and there's a great blue heron nesting area. It's great. And you want to get out and see what we have to offer out there, because it's really, really good. You can also organize events. You can take people for rides. I strongly encourage getting a hold of the proper officials in your area and getting them to, take a short trip with you. Just take them out on their bikes. Put a smile back on their face. Show them how important this is and how important it is to our community. This is a really, really good thing. So let's keep promoting those. And remember, this evening, public information hearing in Bolton at the Bolton Senior Center, 104 Notch Road, Bolton, Connecticut, 7 p.m. And it's all about a connecting trail, which is going to connect to the Hop River Trail from Quarry Road into Bolton at Bolton Notch and into the Hop River Trail. So come on out. Maybe I'll see you there tonight. And we can chat a little bit if you'd like. I am Peddlin' Ron. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host Fran Storch, show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. Remember, you can always reach us by email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is 91.7 WHUS Storrs, Connecticut. Thank you so much for listening.